Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, the NCAA tournament taking center stage, including here in Buffalo, where the Mid-American Conference champions UB Bulls are in the West region. They will head to Tulsa, Oklahoma as the sixth seed. On Friday, late afternoon, they'll play the winner of a first four game between Arizona State and St. John's. That game will tip off at approximately 4 o'clock in Tulsa. It'll air on TNT. UB with 31 wins, tied with Houston for the most wins in the country this year. They won their second straight NCAA tournament and fourth title in 5 years with a win Saturday night in Cleveland in the MAC. Duke, the number one overall seed in this year's tournament. Top seeds also to their fellow ACC buddies, Virginia and North Carolina. Gonzaga, the other number one. Tournament starts with the first four on Wednesday this week. Here at One Bills Drive, quiet today, but the Bills added to their offensive line arsenal with the addition of offensive tackle Adrian Waddle on Saturday afternoon. Signed a one-year deal, a six-year veteran. He's been a spot starter at offensive tackle for the New England Patriots for the last four seasons. He is 27 years old. Waddle, 6'6", 315 pounds, the fifth free agent offensive lineman signed by the Bills in the last couple of weeks. Miami Dolphins have agreed to terms on a two-year contract with quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. ESPN says it's an $11 million deal containing incentives that could boost it to between $17 and $20 million. Fitzpatrick becomes one of only three quarterbacks on the Dolphins roster right now. Jordan Mills, free agent from the Buffalo Bills, has been a starter the last three seasons, spending today on a free agent visit with the Houston Texans, according to a league source. Mills, a former Bears fifth-round draft pick. And former Bills quarterback A.J. McCarron, set to go to Houston today for a free agent visit. He was just released from the Oakland Raiders. Haloti Ngata, longtime defensive lineman who went to five Pro Bowls, scaled Mount Kilimanjaro, unveiled a banner over the weekend that said, "I'm retiring from the NFL on top." That's the way to go out. I was thinking about doing that, Joe, going over to Chestnut Ridge when my career is over. And
there you go.
Just kidding. Joe B. is with us here today. Joe Biscaglia from WKBW-TV Channel 7 in place of Steve Tasker on vacation for one more week. John Murphy with you as we talk about free agency and the draft. And joining us right now on the line is staff writer for The Ringer, contributor to The Ringer Show NFL podcast, former Grantland writer, Robert Mays. Robert, it's John Murphy and Joe Biscaglia here in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us.
No problem, guys. Good to talk to you.
Really good post from you. I think it was last week, maybe Friday. The teams that have defined the 2019 offseason. First, can we agree, Robert, that the offseason is maybe half over, right? Is that right, you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably half over in a few different senses. I mean, you have free agency coming to a close. I think there are still some decent values out there, but for the most part, the big names are gone. And then we'll have the draft. And at this point, maybe a couple more ridiculous kind of head-turning trades, because it seems like we have one of those every week now.
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous head-turning, I'm assuming you're referring to, say, for instance, Antonio Brown a couple of weeks ago and Odell Beckham last week, right?
I mean, arguably the two best receivers in the NFL got traded within a few days of each other. So if you want to say the NFL has an offseason or, you know, there's ever a downtime for people like us, you would be very, very wrong.
Different circumstances with those two trades, but why do you think that happened for those two?
I mean, I think it's a matter of cultural fit. I feel like that was the case with both guys. Antonio Brown had kind of run out of a runway in Pittsburgh, and clearly they had some trouble kind of coexisting with him and Ben Roethlisberger, and then it feels like the Giants just felt like Odell Beckham was not worth the trouble. So, I mean, you have two guys, again, that are impossibly talented, but for whatever reason, they just felt like they were rubbing the people the wrong way, or there was so much discord in those buildings that it wasn't worth it anymore.
Hey, Robert, I know you keep a close eye on what every team does in free agency, but in terms of what the Bills were able to do, I also know that you're a big Bears guy, and so you know intrinsically what they did last year in free agency. And I was wondering if perhaps maybe you saw maybe a parallel from the way that the Bears kind of did things back in 2018 to how the Bills kind of did things. Maybe one big splash, but just a bunch of logs in the fire, so to speak, which is, I think, what the Bears did, too.
I feel like, you know, all of these teams with quarterbacks on a rookie contract understand that you only have so much time where you have a lot of financial flexibility. That's why the Bears did what they did last year, and the Rams have made those sorts of similar moves, and that's kind of where the Bills are at. And I think the real difference is that the Bills don't have that one huge ticket item. I mean, the Mitch Morse contract is considerable for his position, but Khalil Mack's making $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. For the most part, the Bills were more cautious. I mean, if you look at pretty much every single one of those deals outside of the Morse contract, the Bills can get out of it after this season with very little penalty. So I feel like they did a really good job of kind of splitting the difference of, All right, we have this money. We have a ton of cash also. I mean, they were the team, I think, projected to spend the most by over the cap a couple weeks ago just based on their yearly budget. So you understood they were going to spend some money, but they also didn't really set themselves up to fail in the long term. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the Cole Beasley contract is something where I think it's like $3 million in dead money after this season. So to add talent to your roster at several different positions while not putting yourself in a bad spot down the road, that's impressive and difficult to do. And when you consider how much reshaping they had to do along the offensive line, and four starters pretty much. I mean, you need to figure out four different spots, and that's so hard to do without being irresponsible. And I think they've done a really good job of finding guys on cheap deals that would be able to start for them in a pinch and make them functional, which that was never a guarantee when you consider the types of players they were losing and where they were at those spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Robert, I got to give you credit for acknowledging and recognizing what the Bills have done here, because you've got them as one of the eight teams that have defined the 2019 preseason. And essentially what you're saying is they've done it without a big splash, right? I mean, a good center is their number one move in this offseason so far. People, I don't know if the whole league is acknowledging what they've done, and especially remaking the offensive line.
Yeah, and I think that one of the reasons I consider them one of those teams is that if you look at Mitch Morse and Cole Beasley, I mean, those are two players that other teams wanted. You know, those are guys that had markets. And for the Bills to come in and say, we're going to pay for these guys. We're going to get some bigger ticket items that other teams had interest in. You know, maybe they're not the most expensive players on the market, but they're definitely guys that had suitors elsewhere. And I think that's what's really nice to see from Buffalo. And I think that's kind of what Brandon Bean alluded to last week when he was getting a little bit annoyed about the Antonio Brown thing. It's like, this is an attractive destination. This is a football crazy place, and we can get people into this building. I think that's why it's a really good sign for them.
Robert, I know you love breaking down offensive line and defensive line stuff, and so I'll just stick there. I mean, when the Bills signed Mitch Morse, I mean, it's a difficult thing for fans to kind of comprehend that don't sit down and watch the film. So what do you make of Mitch Morse? What exactly are the Bills getting in him, and where do they kind of go from here with him?
When he's healthy, he's solid. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a star. He's not one of the three or four best centers in the league, which he's now being paid like, but that's just how free agency works. If you hit free agency and you're a solid starter, there's a very good chance you're going to reset the market. Think about how many players at different positions did that this year. And I think the biggest thing about a free agent center is just the stability it provides you. I mean, Eric Wood was good for years. I mean, I think you guys watched that. You know what that position can mm-hmm. do when you have an above average player there. You think about just what a guy like Alex Mack did for Atlanta. And Mitch isn't on that level. But again, just a stabilizing force. And I think that's the most important thing when it comes to an offensive line, is really understanding how the players in certain positions affect the guys next to them. And I think that that's a really big thing for them. You saw what happened with Kansas City last year when he was dinged up a little bit. They had trouble. They had a lot of trouble in the middle of that line, especially in the playoffs, with guys kind of moving around, everything else. So to have a force there that's like, all right, we can rely on this guy, that can be an offense-altering thing.
Well, by the way, Mitch Morse is on our show with us here coming up at the bottom of this hour, about 18 minutes away. We're on the line right now with Robert Mays from The Ringer. He wrote a piece about the eight teams that have defined the NFL offseason so far. One of them, Robert, you have the Green Bay Packers, who made some big signings. And we're not used to saying that. The Packers are usually under the radar when it comes to free agent signings, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's typically what their MO had been under Ted Thompson and previous regimes. They're a team that absolutely cherished their comp draft picks. And when guys were leaving free agency, they would never kind of put those in peril by spending money. And we saw that change this year. I mean, you have Za'Darius Smith going there. You have Preston Smith going there. You have Adrian Amos going there. I mean, those are three guys that, again, were near the top of the market at their individual positions. And those are big, big contracts. And I think that there's a couple different things in play there. One, Green Bay understands that its window is small. I mean, there's only a few more years of Aaron Rodgers left. They understand that they have to get better in a hurry. And they also feel like some teams really started to not vilify free agency in the same way that they might have in years past. But we've seen how free agency can help shape championship teams. The Eagles were extremely aggressive in free agency a couple of years ago. We saw a team like Denver, when they won the Super Bowl, reshape their defense with a couple free agent signings. So there are bargains to be found, or not bargains to be found, but there are useful players to be found. And I think that kind of shifts away from, well, good teams don't spend in free agency, to, if you find the right players, it can be helpful, has kind of made teams like Green Bay a little bit less apprehensive about making those kind of moves.
Robert, what in your estimation, what exactly is Dave Gettleman doing?
I really have no idea.
Me neither.
I think that this is one of those things, you know, it's easy to say, Dave Gettleman,
right,
because he's the one that's facing the media, and he's kind of in front of the firing squad at this point. But we don't know what kind of strings ownership is pulling. And that's always
fair.
The most difficult thing to kind of comprehend. And it feels to me as if the Giants' ownership structure and the Maras and everything else, there is such an affinity for Eli Manning and what he's done for that franchise that they're doing nothing to jeopardize how he feels about them, how they feel about him, any of that stuff. I think that if you had taken a quarterback with the number 2 overall pick last year, they would have seen it as maybe we're ruffling some feathers and rubbing Eli the wrong way by sticking with him now. And I just think that it's misguided. I think that at a certain point, you have to be realistic with yourself. You have to have some self-awareness about your quarterback and your roster and your trajectory. I mean, I tweeted it today. When the Colts knew they could get a quarterback at number 1, they said goodbye to Peyton Manning,
mm-hmm.
who is a much, much better player than Eli Manning is. At a certain point, I know the relationships are important and everything else, but you have to do what's best for your franchise, and it seems like systematically at this point, they are not doing that.
You know, Robert, I had a conversation with our crew in the control room right in the break right before you came on the air about Gettleman, and I've known Dave Gettleman for 30-some years, and I caution these guys. I think you make a good point, by the way, about who knows what the ownership is directing him to do, but Gettleman's being portrayed as some sort of a goofball right now, like, you know, a crazy uncle. He's not really, and his quote today, we've got a plan. You got to be patient. That'd be hard to swallow if I were a Giants fan, but I bet he's got a plan, which might not make a whole lot of sense to fans right now, but I bet he's got a plan, something in mind where he's going to wind up with this team, if not right away, but at some point in the next several months. And, by the way, he's probably going to get all of that time from that ownership group, right?
Yeah, most likely, yes. But the problem for me is that I can't see what the plan is. Maybe it exists, but it seems like there are a lot of conflicting plans. And when you go, you trade Odell Beckham for picks, and you're trying to kind of reshape your roster, and you trade away a guy like Olivier Vernon. I know they got an offensive line in the back, but still. They're trying to do too many things at once, in my opinion. Because if you're trying to kind of rebuild and restock and reshape your team because you've made some incorrect free agent choices, and you really need just more talent, then going out and signing more guys in free agency doesn't seem to make sense to me. Why the Golden Tate contract, for example. You're screwing up the third round comp pick you were going to get for Landon Collins. It's just, there's so many things that seem to be in direct conflict with each other that it seems very hard for me to believe they have a cohesive plan that makes any sense.
I hear you.
When I look at a team like Miami and what the Dolphins are doing, that's a plan. I don't know how it's going to work, but they're going to be very bad at football this year, and they're paying their quarterback $5 million, and they're going to have $120 million in cap space. That is a plan, and that's why it's frustrating when teams try to have everything at once, and that's really, really difficult to pull off.
Robert, Joe and I were talking about this earlier. The reports are now basically today confirmed by Gettleman that he called Buffalo to ask about interest in Odell Beckham. What are we to make of that here? I believe it, but I don't know what to think of it. What do you think?
I mean, I think that that's the logical team to pick if you want to try to shop him, just because they're the team that was interested in Antonio Brown before that trade fell apart. So if you think, all right, they're in the market for a big-ticket wide receiver, why not give them a ring? I think that makes a lot of sense. I can also understand why Buffalo wouldn't be willing to part with that sort of draft capital. I mean, the Giants essentially said that Jabril Peppers is a huge part of that deal. So I mean, it's a really specific type of offer that the Browns had to give up for Odell Beckham. And they're, you know, without the Peppers part of that deal, if they're asking for 2 first-round picks, I can understand why Brandon Bean just would hang up the phone. They have a plan. Trading 2 first-round picks for Odell Beckham doesn't seem to be a part of their timeline.
Gotcha.
Robert, as we kind of shift into the next phase, which is draft prep, you know, just getting clubbed over the head with draft information over the next 6 weeks, one thing I'm interested, going back to the offensive line, because I know you like it a lot, in terms of how these guys from college transfer into the pros and how there's sort of a steeper learning curve than there once was. And in your mind, I guess the idea of drafting linemen highly in terms of first round top 10, Quentin Nelson notwithstanding, because he was kind of an anomaly in what he was. But in terms of drafting offensive linemen that high, what is your opinion on that based on the college game as opposed to the NFL right now?
I'm okay with drafting offensive linemen high. It's just a matter of which type of offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
I hate offensive line picks that are done on athletic profile and potential. I just feel like the barrier to being good at that position and learning it is so high in this era of a CBA where there is such little practice time,
mm-hmm.
that drafting a guy and saying, oh, look at his feet, all this stuff, like we can make him a player, that's really dangerous at those positions. But if you're looking at a guy, and I haven't done my draft prep yet because I'm in the throes of free agency, but
right.
Everything I've heard from people that I trust, a guy like Jonah Williams, for example, from Alabama, he's a player. He's ready-made. He knows how to play the position. This isn't look at how well he moves in shorts kind of thing. It's look at how he dominates the highest level of competition. Players like that are proven, that don't need a ton of work and are already really polished at those spots, I have no problem taking a guy like that really high. Quentin Nelson is the exact type of player. So I feel like it's not about the position necessarily. It's about the traits you're looking for in the position.
Hey, Robert, the Browns are one of the offseason teams that you said have defined the offseason so far. And you also wrote last Thursday, time to take the Browns seriously now that they have Odell. I guess we all agree with that, but how serious are we talking? Make the playoffs seriously? Win the division seriously? Contend for the Super Bowl? I mean, how much better are the Browns, do you think?
I think they're fantastically better.
Really?
They should be the favorite in that division, in my opinion. I was just looking at it today and just kind of going back down all the talent they've added this offseason. It's staggering. It's a staggering amount of talent, especially when you consider the last calendar year on top of that. To add in one season, Denzel Ward, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Olivier Vernon, Sheldon Richardson, it's just, and Myles Garrett 2 years ago, just how much that roster has been reshaped. And I absolutely think they have more talent than any team in that division. Their ceiling and how far they can go this year is completely tied into how much better Baker Mayfield gets. And I believe he can be really, really good.
What kind of role does the first-year head coach play in that Cleveland scenario?
I think that it's definitely a wild card, but I also think that you saw what he can do with that roster last year. In almost every scenario, I am vehemently opposed to teams retaining their interim coach. It just is such an emotion-based decision that almost never works out. But when you watch what he did with that team over the second half of the season, and especially with Baker Mayfield, I don't think you could go anywhere else. I think the decision was made for them because you guys are doing the same thing up in Buffalo right now. When you have a quarterback that you drafted highly and he's young, all that matters is shaping a roster around that guy to get the most you possibly can out of him. And I think that's why they went with Freddie Kitchens, and that's why I'm pretty optimistic about it.
And in bringing it back to the Bills, since you naturally transitioned there, I mean, looking up and down their roster, obviously notwithstanding because the draft is on the way, but where do you kind of see them stacking up in the grand scheme of maybe not even just the AFC East, because obviously they're behind the Patriots, but in the whole scope of the AFC and where they kind of figure in there?
I mean, I think they can be a solid team. I think they still have a lot of work to do on the offense, but they've come a long way from where they were last year. Even having guys like Cole Beasley, John Brown, what's the right tackle's name? I can't pronounce it. Ty something?
Inseki.
Inseki, he was really solid in Washington last year as kind of their swing guy, and he could play a little bit because of injuries. He's a really reliable player, fascinating career, but really reliable. Those are the types of moves. If you're not going to spend big and you're trying to build through the draft, which it seems like they're trying to do, I think it's just about building an infrastructure that's sustainable and that's usable for your quarterback. And I really think they've done a lot of that. I mean, two starters on the offensive line, at least. We'll see, you know, if Long wins that job or whatever. But then you go get Brown, you go get Beasley. They could easily add a big-ticket wide receiver in this draft if they wanted to. I think that there are moves still to be made, but I really like the steps they've taken so far to build something around Allen in that offense.
Hey, Robert, thanks for this. It's great to get your take on where the offseason stands at this approximate halfway point. We thank you very much for joining us. Hope we talk again sometime.
My pleasure, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Robert
Mays is the staff writer at The Ringer, contributor to The Ringer NFL Show podcast, former Grantland writer. He's got the eight teams that have defined the NFL offseason so far. I guess I would submit the Giants have defined the offseason so far, too, right?
Yeah.
Not on his list.
Yeah, just like the Raiders did last offseason.
Yeah.
And really, even into the summer with Khalil Mack. Yeah, it's has not been a great look for the Giants, but I mean, they're one huge move away from them being able to rectify all of it. So it's just a matter of if they're able to do something.
What about the Bills and where they stand? Is wide receiver still a need for the Bills in the draft? What do you think? That's our Twitter poll. Let's check the numbers right now. The last we checked, it's about 76% of respondents say, yeah, you know what? It is still a need. 76% say yes, 24% say no. What do you think? You can vote on our Twitter poll. You can send in a tweet. We'll read it on the air. Maybe, or you can give us a call on the tweet sheet. Tim Hurries tweets this, and I wouldn't take a wide receiver at number 9, but I'd take one later in the draft. UB's Anthony Johnson would be a good late-round pick for the Bills. That dude can play. It'd be awesome to keep him in Buffalo. Did we talk? We didn't talk about Anthony yet, did
No,
we?
Not really.
Have you done much study on him yet,
Joe? Not a ton. I do know he is extremely motivated. Mm-hmm. I mean, just he's a very intense guy, just talking with him. I mean, in terms of being able to go up and get it, he's someone that that does very well with it. I, truth be told, I need to do more on mm-hmm. him just because I don't want to sit here and tell you exactly what he is as a player. I've watched maybe one of his games, like fine tooth comb to him. So based on where he's projected, it seems like late day 2, early day 3 is probably what is going to happen for him. But he's one of those guys that I'm looking forward to watching.
Got a call on the line from Kevin in Hamburg. Hello, Kevin. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okay.
I like a receiver, but in the second round, I like the defensive lineman in the first round, particularly that Clemson guy, Christian Wilkins. I like him because I watched him in the championship game, and he was all over Alabama. Christian Wilkins, he was all over everything they did, the offense, he was all over him. Wilkins for sacks, Wilkins for tackles behind scrimmage. I love to see him go for the first round. Receiver, like Joe said, in the second, but I would love to have someone like Wilkins. He was a beast in that Alabama killing of getting killed by Clemson.
Thanks, Kevin. In that scenario, you know, wait to get your wide receiver is something that a lot mm-hmm. of people have talked about, especially with the surplus of talent on the defensive line. That could very well could happen.
Yeah, I like the idea of waiting on a wide receiver. I'm not out on the idea of them taking a wide receiver at some point in the draft. But I think there is more value to be had, and especially to the roster that they have right now. They can, if they were able to get a pass rusher, a defensive line, a defensive tackle, a three technique, or a tight end, I think those would be instant contributors to what the Bills are trying to do this year, whereas the wide receiver, because they just have so many bodies there right now, they have four different players that they need to get time to. I mean, taking one at 9th overall, like I said, I'm not going to rule it out. I just, it's not really a favorite scenario of mine in terms of building your roster.
Why do we have to, why do we have to worry about this year? You know what I mean? They have said they want to build to be good in the future.
Fair.
If there's a receiver, a difference-making receiver available to them at number 9, I won't mention any names, Metcalf. But if there's a
there's only one name.
If there's that guy there and he measures up, I'm not suggesting they blindly draft him. But if they think he is a guy who can make a difference for years to come, which he might be,
then do it.
Right?
If you feel that strongly in it, then do it. But they also do need to find out about Robert Foster and Zay Jones.
You don't set your priority around finding out about people.
No, you don't.
You build your team.
It's also about positional premiums. And I don't know that this regime necessarily looks at wide receiver as one of those things that you spend a top 10 pick on. I don't. I could be wrong.
They've traded for a couple. This regime has traded for a couple of veteran receivers in their first couple of years here.
Sure.
Giving up assets.
And they tried to get Antonio Brown for a third and a fifth. What'd they give up for Kelvin Benjamin? A third and, what was it, a seventh?
Yeah.
So it's not as though, I mean, third rounders are still substantial, but it's not a first round pick. It's not a top 10 pick. Just based on, and you can't look at everything they did in Carolina and be like, that's the way they're going to do it. But the one thing they did a ton in Carolina is add defensive linemen early and often. And you know how many defensive linemen this Bills regime has added in the last 2 years in the first two rounds? Zero. They need to add edge rushers. They need to add defensive tackles. It's something that they believe very strongly in.
All right, we got a break coming up here. We're going to talk with one of the new Bills, Mitch Morse, center, signed to the roster last Wednesday. We'll talk with him on the phone line when we come back. It's One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Joe Biscaglia is in place of Steve Tasker here this week for a couple of days. Chris Mount will be in on Thursday and Friday. Welcome back to the show. We're trying to make contact with Mitch Morse. Is he on the line yet? Not yet. We're going to get to him. The Bills free agent center. The Bills paid a premium for Mitch Morse. Robert Mays was talking about that, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, you know, he's the highest paid center in the league. I don't think anybody in Buffalo cares that he's the highest paid center in the league. I have yet to see anybody say, oh, the Bills really blew it with that signing.
No, it was one of those positions where as long as the Bills spent money and got somebody, fans were cool with it because the center position was so – it left a lot to be desired last year, and that's putting it kindly.
The second time today, Joe, is
– trying to be kind. But
are you really trying? That's my question.
Sure. But he was an addition that Bills fans were totally over the moon about, and, you know, him getting paid that money. It's one of those positions that we've seen Brandon Bean value highly before in terms of putting dollars to it. The Eric Wood extension that – really, they didn't need to do that early when they did it, but they did. And he had cap hits of somewhere around like $9 million for his first 2 years, and this was 2 years ago. So by power of inflation and free agency, there you have it. Yeah. And Mitch Morse is here, and they hope he's going to stabilize the offensive line for sure.
Mitch Morse is with us now on the line. The Bills' new center signed last week to a free agent contract with the Buffalo Bills. Hello, Mitch. John Murphy and Joe Biscaglia here in our One Buffalo studio at One Bills Drive. Sorry we missed you last week. That was kind of a hectic free-for-all last Wednesday. Which day was it? It was Thursday when you were here with the rest of the free agents.
Yeah, no, I appreciate y'all having me on.
Where are you calling from, Mitch?
I'm here in Kansas City right now trying to get everything ready to roll back to Buffalo.
You're moving then? You're moving the family here to Buffalo eventually? Or?
Yeah, me and the wife are going to head up there probably sometime in the next few weeks, maybe in a week or so.
And you got mid-April report time, I guess, for if you want to, for the optional off-season condition. I imagine you're getting ready for that, right?
Oh, yes.
Not optional in your mind.
No.
Hey, Mitch, tell us the process that got you here to Buffalo. You could not have been surprised knowing about the Bills' needs and what the Bills' focus might have been in free agency that you wound up here with the Buffalo Bills.
You know, it's no one really told me how crazy all that can be. I mean, you kind of have a rough guess of where you could possibly end up, and then for about 24 hours, your life was a whirlwind, and I mean, then the opportunity arose, and I mean, it was a pretty easy choice after, you know, talking with my agent and just kind of doing a little research and vetting. It just seemed like the perfect place for me and my family and a place to kind of just grow as a person and grow as a football player.
Was it an easy choice because of the opportunity, or was it the money, or what made it an easy choice for you?
You know, it was both. I mean, you'd be lying if you said it wasn't both. But, you know, for me, I never went out trying to be the highest paid center, to be honest. And it still kind of makes me uncomfortable if I'm being frank. It's just kind of something I've never wanted to be. But, you know, it's not the worst thing. Just talking to the people, kind of understanding the owners and their mindset, and, you know, Coach McDermott, and, understanding that he was, you know, kind of through Coach Reed. You know, he's just such a family-oriented dude. That kind of floated my boat. And that's my cup of tea. So it was a fairly easy choice after that part.
Hey, Mitch, when you did your vetting, even before talking to Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, the Pegulas, I mean, who did you kind of reach out to find out what Buffalo and this regime and this locker room was all about?
Sure. I really didn't have too many contact points, but, Ike. He's a offensive lineman, and so I reached out to Ike, and he mm-hmm. He said only good things. And I knew Marcus Murphy was here, which is a buddy of mine, and he seems to be enjoying it. For me, it wasn't too hard. I was about to reach out to Eric Wood, but everything kind of came to fruition so quickly that I wasn't able to reach out to him. But I really wasn't too worried about all that.
Mitch Morse on the line with us, the Bills center, signed to a free agent contract going into his fifth season in the NFL. Tell me about the first four seasons in the NFL with the Chiefs, Mitch. You obviously had success on a well-coached and finely-tuned offensive machine there in Kansas City. Is it difficult to leave a situation that had been going so well in Kansas City for the last few years?
Well, you know, mostly difficult for personal reasons. You know, my family and I, really liked the city of Kansas City. We planted our roots here. I think it's part of the business. You're moving on, and I think for me, it's going to really help me as a football player. Sometimes change is a little bit unsettling, but in this instance, I think it's the best thing for me. And to answer your question, I'm really looking forward to the change. I think it's just the way it goes, and I couldn't be in a better position.
Mitch, this might sound a little weird, but I'm guessing you might find that Buffalo and Kansas City are a little bit similar, just in terms of the type of people and the type of atmosphere, the avid interest in the NFL team. Have you noticed anything like that in your initial stop?
Absolutely. I have to admit the fans are such an integral part of me choosing Buffalo, and the fact that they're so passionate about the team. Just blue collar folk, just really down to earth people. I feel like it's a Midwest feel, much like Kansas City in that department. I definitely feel like they're both very passionate fan bases, and I'm looking for. I don't know how many people who jump off of stuff and break their face on tables. So I'm looking forward to kind of feeling that culture, and those are my kind of people.
Mitch, when you were coming out of Mizzou, you were a right tackle, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. When you came to it, and Kansas City wanted to move you inside to center, no less. I mean, how much did you kind of struggle with that early on, or what exactly was that learning curve like? And did you ever expect it to land you what it did, this free agency?
Oh man, to answer that last bit, no way. I was just trying to focus on one day at a time, to be honest with you, especially getting into my rookie season. I kind of bounced around. My sophomore season, I was played some center. My junior season, I was right tackle. Senior season, left tackle. So every year I kind of changed positions. And at the point, I was just looking forward to the opportunity. And then, Coach Reed put me in an opportunity to play early and kind of prove myself and trial by fire. And I guess the biggest thing was, first of all, the speed and the strength. Everyone is just at the top of their game. And then I played in a kind of a spread offense where there was only five or six guys in the line of scrimmage. And then you go in and you put power big boy football. You put eight or nine guys in the line of scrimmage. Well, defense is going to mirror that, so I'd never seen more than six guys in the box. And now there's, eight or nine dudes, so just kind of identifying and understanding, the pro-style football. It definitely was a big leap for me, but I was able to kind of learn as it went on. It was a lot of trial and error and getting whooped up a bit in practice, but, I think that's part of the gig,
Hey, Mitch, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of similarities between Pat Mahomes and Buffalo's Josh Allen, and yet for the second consecutive year, you'll be this center for a pretty talented second-year quarterback in the NFL. Have you thought about that at all, and maybe some of the things you were able to do for Mahomes that might translate to Josh?
No, I think for me, my job is just to make Josh's life as easy as possible. Being just kind of like a liaison between the offensive line and Josh, just trying to make his job a lot easier. Pat and I learned a lot from each other this year. I mean, he's a special talent, and he helped me out probably way more than I helped him out. But I think it's good to have a kind of a continuous, line of communication. It's kind of being on the same, having the same verbiage and kind of seeing the same thing. So, I mean, that's going to help immensely when we just get to know each other, probably hang out off the field a bit just to kind of see how he works. I love to see how he thinks and how he processes the game. So I'm really excited. Josh was a big reason why, another big reason why I came to Buffalo. I think you have to have a quarterback. Your team has to be revolved around a talented quarterback to go deep into the playoffs, and I think Josh has the capability to do that.
Hey, Mitch. You only got a small taste of Buffalo. I mean, you were here for only a few days, but what kind of stood out to you about even in just those few days about what you like the most about it?
Yeah, I like the people. I think the people are just very friendly, really passionate about their teams, and just a hardworking group of folk who try to make each other's lives a lot easier. It really does have a Midwest feel in that department. And besides that, the wings are just crazy good. And I'm looking forward to kind of eating my way through town. I can use all the help I can get, to be honest.
Did you get to a hockey game the other night when you were here, Mitch? You were talking about it.
Shoot, no, I talked a big game, and then I forgot that I had previous engagement with my O-line coach to go eat. So
okay,
I had to dip out on that. But I heard the Sabres had a big win the other night against the Blues.
Yeah, that was pretty big for them.
Good deal.
Hey, last thing I got for you, Mitch. You know, there's five new offensive linemen signed here over the last couple of weeks, and you met them, two new offensive line coaches. How soon can you guys pull this together, figure out who's playing where and how we're going to play? I mean, that seems like offensive lines seem to thrive when there's continuity. You guys don't have that experience now to lean on, right?
Right. Well, I feel like every year in the league, I mean, you have guys come and go, so you have to do that on a much more minute level, but you do have to find, no offensive line group's the exact same. And so for us, this will just be that on kind of a grander scale, getting to know the guys. And that's when OTAs are so important. So I think it'll be finding our own niche, us understanding how coach thinks, and he's going to kind of understand how we as individuals process information and practice. And so it'll be for sure a little learning curve, but, as long as we're hitting stride week one, that's the only thing. I'm sure there'll be some bumps in the road, but we're going to get to work and just enjoy each other's company. And I'm just looking forward to getting to know the guys a bit.
Hey, Mitch, have you ever met a human larger than Ty Ensecki?
Oh, no, that dude's gigantic.
I know.
That's a big man right there.
I'm just curious because you've been around a lot of big people.
Sure.
But he's
a big dude right there for sure.
Exactly.
Hey, Mitch, thanks for this. We're a couple of weeks away from getting you guys here for the off-season workouts. We look forward to visiting with you then as well. Thank you very much for this today.
Yeah. Sounds good, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mitch.
Mitch Morse, Bills center, just signed to the roster last Wednesday, going into his fifth season in the NFL, former second-round pick of the Chiefs in 2015, joined us on the line. Interesting guy. Seems to have the perfect kind of attitude, and especially when it comes, I think, Joe, to pulling this group together. As I said, this is not it's great to have new talent, but you got to make this all fit, make it work with a whole new offensive line coaching staff. It's going to be a challenge, I think, especially in April and May and June before they get to camp.
His on the field is important, don't get me wrong, but his role within that locker room is of the utmost importance to them. And it seems like you can only gauge so far in talking with him 10 minutes here and 10 minutes in a press conference, but it seems like he has the right mindset, the right mentality for how to kind of go about and be that guy to kind of just, help everybody else through finding themselves as an offensive line unit. And that's so important. And that's why Brandon Bean puts so much of an emphasis into finding a free agent center, finding a veteran free agent center, someone that has upside like Mitch Morse. So I think he's going to be a dramatic upgrade to what they had last year in a couple of different areas, both on the field and in the locker room.
Joe, with Mitch Morse, where does Spencer Long go? Swing guard?
I think he's a guard and potentially backup interior guy, which doesn't exactly bode well for Russell Bodine or Vlad Dukas. But, Spencer Long can still win a job. They have to go through the draft. I honestly think they'll probably end up taking an interior guy or some offensive lineman, form of lineman. They'll have to get one of those in there because they need another one to develop besides Deion Dawkins. But even still, I mean, Long might challenge for that right guard spot. Maybe he's the backup center. John Feliciano's going to have something to say about left guard because that's where he played for the Raiders in his four starts last year. And Wyatt Teller's still there. So there's going to be a lot to decide. I said it earlier. I'm all charged up to watch one-on-ones in training camp already. There's so many new people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest. Watching Jordan Mills for the last 3 years, I grew a little tired of it.
Cold.
No, not cold. I mean, it's just because I knew they were trying to replace him. Yeah. But that said, he was still good enough to hang on to the job. But and you always wondered if one of those younger guys would make the leap, but they never did. And it's just like, I was ready for a refresh.
Oh, they've been refreshed.
Yeah,
they sure
have.
All right, One Bills Live coming back with more from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. So what do we learn from today's show presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills? Robert Mays joined us earlier this hour from TheRinger.com. He's written a post about the defining teams for the offseason so far in the NFL. He's got the Buffalo Bills as one of the eight teams that have defined the offseason, and he told us why.
one of the reasons I consider them one of those teams is that if you look at Mitch Morse and Cole Beasley, I mean, those are two players that other teams wanted. You know, those are guys that had markets. And for the Bills to come in and say, we're going to pay for these guys. We're going to get some bigger ticket items that other teams had interest in. You know, maybe they're not the most expensive players on the market, but they're definitely guys that had suitors elsewhere. And I think that's what's really nice to see from Buffalo. And I think that's kind of what Brandon Bean alluded to last week when he was getting a little bit annoyed about the Antonio Brown thing. It's like, this is an attractive destination. This is a football crazy place, and we can get people into this building. I think that's why it's a really good sign for them.
Robert Mays, you know, it's kind of funny, Joe, how in the 10 or 11 days since the Antonio Brown fiasco, the narrative's been turned around. I mean, you just heard Robert Mays say, this is an attractive destination. I think for smart fans, anyway, it's a little bit like, oh, yeah, the Buffalo has something to offer.
Yeah, and it revolves around one fact. They have a semblance of a quarterback now.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
And really, that's all. I mean, Brandon Bean has made this point in public appearances before. I mean, Green Bay was never Green Bay, this huge destination.
That's right.
Until Brett Favre, and then Reggie White.
Yeah.
And then from there, they've been incredible because Brett Favre was a longstanding quarterback, one of the best in the league for a long time. Aaron Rodgers took that torch, and they've been a destination ever since.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why it's so important to get the quarterback.
Yeah.
Like Mitch Moore said, by the way.
That's right.
It's so important.
It was one of the factors for him.
Yep.
Hey, our Twitter poll today, apparently people believe that the Bills are still in the market for wide receiver and should be on Twitter. We asked the question, is wide receiver still a need for the Bills in the draft? 75% said yes, it is. I think we also got the sense that people thought maybe later on, not necessarily first round.
And I would agree with that assessment.
Yeah,
I think it's more important to add some depth to your roster than it is to find the big guy.
Joe is back with us tomorrow, noon to 3. Make sure you join us. Our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back tomorrow at noon. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.